Welcome to C-Suite Radio.
Okay, Doc, I'm ready. Let's talk about the restrooms that way. Where's my dressing room, Rabbit? How come I haven't had a chance to speak to Brett? We need a part two of this where it's just about Daffy.
It's time for another edition of The Brett Allen Show.
It's go time, you and me!
Join us weekly for the latest pop culture interviews from your favorite TV shows, movies, comedians, and so much more.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you, it felt good.
Plus, you never know who will drop by.
What happened here was a miracle.
Now, here is your host.
I said throw down, boy.
Welcome to the night's main event.
Brett Allen.
Brett Allen here, chatting with the amazingly talented actor, voice actress, storyteller, creative Eric Balza. Woody Woodpecker Goes to Camp has been on constant replay since it dropped on Netflix. And I appreciate your time. Thanks for hanging out.
I guess I had to start it there. If you're going to drop the Woody Woodpecker Goes to Camp bomb on us, then there's only one way to start the interview. Thank you so much for having me on your show and your program. And it's one of those dream come trues in an age where getting a movie made at all is a miracle. And the fact that we're now I guess it's kind of a sequel, I guess. What would you call it, a direct sequel? I'm not even sure.
I don't know, because I know you've been the voice for a while, different iterations, whether it's features or cartoons, whatnot. But I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of fun. When I found out that there was going to be a new one, I was very excited because I'm in that age range, 49, where I grew up watching that show. Yeah. Chilly Willy. I mean, like the whole gamut of those particular cartoons.
Yeah.
And was able to introduce my son to those as well. And so he has had an affinity for Woody Woodpecker for a while, but I think it's cool. And the fact that you are able to get another film done, and Netflix, I think, has been good in that regard as far as providing a venue for things that might not necessarily make it to the big screen. So it's cool. I think it's awesome for sure.
It's a nice, you know, in between. And I feel like that's kind of where those, adaptations of animated characters into the live action world exist, is like they may not want to take a risk on throwing it up on the big screen, unless it's like one of those anomalies, like the original Space Jam from 1997, you know. But they don't necessarily have to be like those over $100 million budget films in order to get the views. You know what I mean? They could. I think this one was, who only knows? I'm thinking of, in terms of Coyote versus Acme, which was $70
million. I was going to see if you're going to bring that up.
Yeah, of course. Why not? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we can have a Woody Woodpecker Goes to Camp movie, but we can't have, you know, and that's like not comparing apples to oranges. Like, I'm just saying, here it is, like a live action animated hybrid movie that was, you know, clearly just meant for streaming, is kicking butt right now in the worldwide scope of Netflix's views. And I love it. Like, it just, hey, guys, like it could work. Like, all you got to do is hit upload.
I know, because that's completely done, which I just found so interesting. Well, I have to say, when I first, I knew who you were, but when I saw you, I don't know, it's probably been a few years, you were on To Tell the Truth with Anthony Anderson. That was a lot of fun seeing you there. And I knew from the start who you were, and I knew that you were the voice. And we're watching this show during the pandemic. I think it might have been even that far back. And I'm like, come on, guys, get it right. But you've been voicing these characters for a while. I want to ask you, because I know with Disney, we've interviewed Daniel Ross, those guys that do the Disney voices, Brett. I'm curious, like, there's you that does the bulk of this, but where is that decision made with those voices in particular? Like, if it's going to be you or perhaps, you know, Bob Bergen or one of these other amazing people like yourself? How are those choices made?
Well, right now, primarily it's myself, Jeff Bergman, Bob Bergen, Fred Tatasciore, you know, people in the past, of course, that are still with us, Billy West, Maurice LaMarche. I'm sure I'm forgetting a few others, but people that have passed on, Joe Alasky, Greg Burson. Like, I think I might only be the sixth person to voice Bugs Bunny in 83, 84 years.
Yeah.
Which is insane to me. He's like as old enough to be our grandparents, Bugs Bunny. I've always been gray. Yeah, gray hair. But yeah, that decision is made by the casting people and the storytellers, ultimately, people who are in charge of the storytelling process, what they need from the character, they may hear in someone else. For instance, the first week, I think maybe actually maybe not be within a week, but definitely within like a month or so, or at least the first half year that I was voicing Bugs for the first time, Space Jam came around, and LeBron and the Malcolm and the rest of casting picked Jeff, you know, over whoever else was performing scratch dialogue. We were all performing temporary voices at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think just at the end of the day, they're just like, oh, you know, this sounds closer to what we need here than that. And yeah, that's just how it is. And at the end of the day, you know, it's for me, it's no hard feelings because I didn't create the character. You know, that's these characters will always be Mel Blanc. You know, let's be serious here. Let's just, be realistic here. It's like, for me, Mel will only be for ultimately the guy who invented the sound of these characters. And we're just the lucky few that kind of help carry it into the next generation. And hopefully they find the original works. I always cite Mel Blanc in all of my interviews and the two Emmys that I won. It's like, if I weren't voicing these characters, if it weren't for Mel Blanc, I'd be driving you to the airport tomorrow.
That could be a fun ride. I mean, especially if you're performing voices on the way to the
Release in St. Louis.
Yeah.
You should have made that left turn in Albuquerque. That's where you
Yeah, I'd be a great tour guide.
You would be.
Himalaya. Yeah.
That's funny.
The Himalayas mountains.
Well, it's so fascinating because I'm sitting here talking to you, Eric, and I see you, but in my ears, I hear these characters, and it's not just somebody like doing impersonations, but you're like fully indelved into this character and you're acting and you've got that whole piece. We've had so many cool voice actors on our show, obviously present company included. And one of the themes that I've heard many people say, I think it was Rob Paulson, it's like, you can do this and you can have these voices, but he always tells people acting, improv, all of those things are just as equally important to as opposed to just coming to this studio with all this equipment that you have and just performing a voice, right? Because there's so much that emotes from even just those couple lines that you did just now.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about the acting and the performance, and I just can't even imagine what it was like. Like, I wish I had a time machine just to travel back to, what, like, the 40s? And like, to a warehouse somewhere on the Warner Brothers lot in Burbank. Mel Blanc is probably dressed in a full wool, like three-button suit. Probably smoking indoors.
Yeah, for probably, sure.
Probably drinking at 11 a.m., who knows? But, like, you know, probably getting paid $5 per short or something like that just to put food on the table. And he's screaming at the top of his lungs,
who's responsible for this? You know, like, he's making up all of these tones and catchphrases and like, you know, anytime I do a line of these classic shorts, it always brings a smile to people's faces. And I'm like, did he even know, like, what he was...
you know, decades and lifetime generations later, did he know like the impact that his work was going to leave behind? So that, like, you know, he, like I always say, he's Santa Claus and I'm like mall Santa, you know, like I'm the guy that's like, hey, I'm Bugs Bunny. And it's like, well, I guess we'll take it. Well, you know, Mel Blanc, he was Bugs Bunny. I guess we'll pass, you know, we'll let you pass. But it brings such joy to people, you know, anytime I, you know, if I'm talking to you, or someone finds out, you know, I go to take visitors from out of town to the Warner Brothers tour. And it's so funny. It's either someone at Warner Brothers that's working there or someone in the tour. Like, it's like, hey, you look, you know, I'm getting to that point now where it's like, you know, I'm being recognized thanks to folks like yourself, you know, sharing the story of my attachment to these characters. And it makes me so happy to see people happy just because of something that I loved as a kid. That's what it really comes down to for me is I imagine for anyone that performed the characters, like when I hear Bob or Jeff or Billy do the voices, I hear how much joy it transcends into the character when they perform it. I'm like, I can imagine like Jeff as a kid eating cereal, watching Looney Tunes as a kid. You know, I hear it in the performance that they deliver because it makes me smile. I'm like, man, that sounds so good. Like they're so good. Each and every one of those performers.
Yeah, 100%. Like I think they just transcend time and have been a part of people's lives forever. I mean,
yeah,
it's crazy. Yeah, it's so wild.
I think that the saying, you know, what's funny is funny. It's like if a funny joke was made in the 40s, it's still going to be funny. If it's just well written, well performed, well executed, you're just going to be like, yeah, it's still good, you know, which is why I'm glad, you know, they will never hopefully they'll never get rid of a place where you can find the classic shorts. Like on Max for HBO and Warner Brothers, like they should be there all the time because if they didn't exist, I wouldn't be working on like a lot of these reimaginings and you know these new versions of the characters. Like they should have a home somewhere so that people can enjoy the original works.
Yeah, 100%. Just as a sidebar, the fascinating thing about all of this. I worked a couple seasons at Six Flags when I was in the Bay Area during their Fright Fest. And we had passes and my son and I were able to go and we worked with a lot of the characters, as they call them, who were also mascot characters, you know, Bugs
really?
Bunny, Marvin the Martian, they all kind of did the same thing. And when we would go visit, they would recognize me and give us special attention, especially the young lady that did Marvin. Well, it was interesting. Yeah, it was really cool. But like, even though I know there's somebody inside of that costume,
yeah.
It's like that suspended reality happens even for me.
Yeah.
And it's just like so badass because it's like, you know, you're
mentioned of performing. Actually, funny you mentioned that because I was just in New York City for Warner Brothers. They received a recognition from the Entertainment Community Fund, which is an organization that sets up people that have, you know, accidents. It's basically there to protect you in case you have like workers leave or something traumatic happens to you. It's a great kind of like charity and kind of this event that happened where they had me fly to New York, do the voices off stage, then come onto the stage and, you know, introduce myself as the voice, one of the current voice performers of these characters. But all the while, the first bit was being acted out by the mascot characters on stage without me present. And I met those performers and they're so great. They were like completely how happy and obsessed I am with these characters, but in a different art form where it's like, yeah, I saw them out of costume, out of character.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, you're Bugs Bunny, I can tell, and you're Daffy. Like, I could tell the two performers apart. And it was just, it was amazing.
Yeah, it's so cool. Like, just to be strolling along and run into, like, Porky Pig or, like, Marvin the Martian or whatever.
They were the, like you said, the Marvin, like you met the performer of Marvin. It's like they're specifically that character, right?
Yeah.
So I met the go-to bugs in the New York area, probably on that side of the States, and Daffy as well. And I was like, wow. I was like, I had so many questions.
I know. It's interesting. Like, it's almost like a starstruck attitude in a way, because it's like, you know, Warner Brothers is very particular in casting those characters, and it's just like Disney. I want to ask you just a turn here really quick about just all these things that you've done, and you started out here and now you're there. When you go along through this process and you're learning, you know, how this all works, like early on when you started, what was like one or two things, Eric, that were important to you that you wanted to make sure people knew about you, when not necessarily like lobbying for the voice, but like knew that this could potentially be something that you would be doing? If that question makes sense, it's a little bit broad.
I think in general, as a voiceover artist, you know, never mind which character, I think I was just happy to be in the booth. And I think it's funny because I thought, oh, how do you get into voice acting at all? Like, what do you do? Like, I should have went to performing arts, class or school, because that's essentially what I ended up learning on the job. Was like, it's no matter how many impressions you can do or how many vocal tricks you have up your sleeve, nothing will ever compare to, like, you know, what Rob Paulsen said and what you just mentioned before is the good acting. And I had to learn that on the job. But what got me through the door, I guess, was just like not giving up and just I did it in such a way that, again, I used my ability to draw. I was a cartoonist.
Yeah.
I was a character layout artist before I became an animator. So I was already in studios where they were producing pilots or commercials that needed temporary voices. And I'd be like, hi, you know, I would volunteer my time. If not there, I knew some of the professors over at USC and UCLA for animation school and like their course there. And I would offer my voice to third year students who are graduating for their thesis films. So I would always just make myself available. And, you know, sometimes you got to volunteer and work for free, or as the students' currency is green apples and granola bars. That was in my Wells Fargo bank account. They thought I was like a squirrel. I was like, here's some peanuts. You can put that in my bank account, please. Just giving the impression and leaving the mark of someone that, like, I really care about this and this is why I'm here, you know? And I really do owe 99% of my career to the kindness of strangers who are now my friends for life. Just people who I met like in 1999 that I'm still working with today, to see all of us where we were at that point to now is kind of insane. To see like where everyone like left and from that internship, to see where they've grown. And I'm very lucky and also very proud of these people that, you know, also were chasing something. It wasn't just me, you know, that we were all together in the trenches, you could say. And it's only because of kindness and trust that I am where I am now. Not going to therapy, you know,
I was going to say with literally all the voices in your head,
this is it, man. This is my happy place. This Sherman Oaks bomb shelter. This is where this is my home, you know? And I love talking to people about it like yourself and reminding myself of how lucky I am and revisiting all of that. I'll never like get settled and used to the fact that this is what I do for a living.
Yeah, I mean, it would be hard in a way, like, because it's just, I mean, there's acting aspects, there's films, televisions, shows, whatever the case might be, but like what you're doing is even so niche compared to all the other things that are part of the industry that you are in. It's crazy, like, just having this conversation this way, you're in your booth, you've got your very nice microphone, and you're ready to go at any moment. The golden handcuffs, as it's often referred to, because you just never know when something's going to come in for you. I want to ask a couple more questions just as we come to the end here. Again, going back to the beginning, I want to just ask, the Woody Woodpecker film, how long did that take? How long have you been working on that?
Oh, man, it didn't take long at all, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
The first one that we did, it felt like we had, you know, a little bit more time. I had gone in a few more times than this one, and I think this one was definitely like, we just got to get this done fast.
Okay, so it wasn't like 2021 when this whole thing started, and now it's just out.
Yeah, I think it was like about a year and a bit.
Okay.
If that, and yeah, it was just a very, I felt like it was like they had plotted out very clearly and very well, like the director was really fun to work with, and they just knew what they wanted, and it only took, like, we did a table read, we did the actual session, then we did a pickup session, and that was it. I mean,
oh wow,
they let me go off, like they let me, we did like a lot of improv, we did a lot of you know, just experimenting on the character and like the scenes and the comedy, because there really were like, we could only afford to do like a take one pass, so
you got to be on your toes.
Yeah, get it all out now, and then maybe some later, but otherwise it was a pretty precise, pretty not much to it, other than like, hey, I've been lucky enough to perform Woody Woodpecker. I didn't even think that Woody Woodpecker was even going to be a possibility of all like the classic icons that we have in our animation history. I never thought that I would be voicing Woody Woodpecker for a second movie. And I hope that we do a third one. I hope that there's a Woody Woodpecker trilogy out there.
There needs to be a Woody Woodpecker multiverse of some kind. Yeah, it's just, it's fun. And again, my son and I love it.
I said, I'm going to pitch either Goes to Jail or Saves Christmas. Because if we're going to lead into the earnest Goes to Camp.
I think Save Christmas would be fun. I could see that.
Yeah, why not?
Woody has a little interaction with Santa and the elves. And there you go. If
Wally
you're watching
Walrus as Santa Claus, you know?
Yeah. Buzz Buzzard could like come in and, you know, steal the presents, kind of a Grinch thing, maybe.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I think we got it right here. This is the pitch, Netflix.
Yeah, I can assure you they're probably not going to see this, but I think
I'm going to tag them in this. So
there you go. Very cool. One last question. Again, so many amazing characters. Can you pick a favorite, or are they just all like have a special place in your life? Have you have successfully and amazingly performed them over the decades?
Well, there's not one job that I love more than the other. They're all equally rewarding in the same sense that I get to do what I love.
But if I have to be honest, Doc, I believe I'm wearing him on my t-shirt.
I mean, Bugs is ultimately to me one of the best, if not the greatest, cartoon character ever created, and I think everyone, because everyone knows Bugs. Once you know you press play or start a Bugs Bunny cartoon, you kind of know what you're getting yourself into, and there isn't probably one short that hasn't left someone happy or without a smile on their face. So
my cheeks are sore from smiling during this interview because it just brings such joy. And I love the fact too, that his sensibility, his awareness of breaking the fourth wall.
Oh yeah.
All of these things have just modernized as time goes along, and they haven't kept him in a vacuum, so to speak, of like just ignorant bliss of not knowing what things are, and always slipping in the adult humor, so to speak, and just keeping it like legit, because I think that's what makes him just the best guy around, for sure.
And timeless, right? I mean, yeah. Again, we're still talking about this character 80 plus years later, and I always, again, taking it back to Mel Blanc, it's like seeing your favorite stand-up comedian or going to a concert of your favorite musician.
Yes.
You know, once you hit, those rabbit season, duck season cartoons, you're there with them. You're kind of singing along, and you're kind of like, you know, repeating the dialogue. And it's just because it's so much fun. And that's, I think, at the end of the day, what this is all about is we're making cartoons, you know, that it doesn't have to be much more complicated than that.
Best job on the planet, Eric, I would say, for sure.
Right. And talking about it with people like yourself who appreciate it and recognize, you know, this is one of the best things to do with your family, you know, relive these experiences as you were as a kid with your own children now. So the fact that you get to hang out with your boy at Six Flags, and so do I. We have season passes. You know, I go there because I love the fact that nothing's changed since the 90s. It's still the same sun-damaged Elmer Fudd statue there. You know, it's like, don't ever change it. Don't ever update it. Just keep it.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've been, but we had season passes in, Marine World as they... Six Flags Marine World, I think it was. But yeah, nothing has changed. Literally, like, there are showpieces from the 2000s that have since been rethemed. But if you're looking and watching and knowing and can go backstage, you can see like things that once, like, you know, Bugs Bunny and Daffy's Dance Party, like all these things no longer exist for whatever reason. I mean, it's just
outdated. They could be updated. They could be updated. I'm telling you.
Well, actually, Six Flags, as a side note here, not to rabbit trail literally, but, you know, like, they just got bought by another company. So I think.
Really?
They're I can't think of the name offhand. I don't want to misspeak, but it's a bigger company that has money and time and finances to really like spruce up the parks.
That's
and
cool.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. They want to be on competition with the mouse. So,
sure.
And provide that same experience that you would get going to Disneyland or wherever the case might be. But,
okay, Doc, I'm ready. Let's talk about, the restrooms of that way. Yeah. Where's my dressing room, Rabbit? How come I haven't had a chance to speak to Brett?
Listen, thank you, Eric. You're the best.
We need a part two of this where it's just about Daffy.
Yeah, well, it's always about Daffy, right? He doesn't get as much limelight as Bugs Bunny does. But
true. I do have a Daffy version of this shirt, which is awesome.
Nice.
But I chose Bugs today.
Awesome. Eric, you're the best. This has been one of the funnest highlights of this show and that we've done. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time, and once more projects drop, you know, there's another Looney Tunes film that may be distributed in theaters this year, possibly. The Day the Earth Blew Up, which is a Porky Daffy Looney Tunes movie, fully animated. So I'm sure once that hits, we'll have more to talk about, and you know where I am. So please give me a shout, and let's chat about more cartoons.
100%.
Thanks for listening and being a part of today's conversation.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider sharing it with a friend. It's absolutely free.
Omega proportions.
The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of the host.
And remember, we care.